Coming up next from the grassy knoll, a terrifying look into the Orwellian world of brainwashing, disinformation, and ultimately control over you. You.
Hello again, and welcome to another segment of The Grassy Knoll. This is Friday, April 23rd, 2004. This is Visigoth. Harry Spencer, my partner, is out there somewhere. I know he is. I can feel him. Our guest for the first hour is Tampa, Florida attorney Rex Curry, right down the road here, right down 275. And Rex has a little problem with the Pledge of Allegiance, and you might, too, once you hear the history behind it. But first, I want to remind you, archives of all shows can be accessed only at visigothsgrassyknoll.org. That's V-Y-Z-Y-G-O-T-H-S, Grassy Knoll, one word. You can access recent shows through radioforall.net using the numeral 4. You can also listen to past Grassy Knoll shows and other alternative programming on Live 365. Go to pascoradio.org and check out the schedule. You can also check in at kgrn.net. And it's on KGRN.net that we are streaming right now. Listen live worldwide 24/7 is what you click on, and you'll come down to the Live 365 icon for a speaker. Click on that, and you're in. So if you want to listen to future shows live, remember we are on from 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time. You may also send an instant message, although we can't do that today. We had a little crash here at the station. There'll be no IMing, so we'll forget about that. Now, lastly, the views expressed on the Grassy Knoll are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or advertisers of WDCF, WZHR, and the TAN Talk Network. And now on to our guest, Rex Curry. And Rex, what is your problem with the pledge?
The U.S., and he wrote it for the purpose of promoting government schools, government taking over education, and to promote socialism through government schools. I'll tell you something else people don't seem to realize. They don't realize that the original salute to the U.S. flag and the Pledge of Allegiance, as the National Socialist wrote it, was a straight-arm salute that was like that adopted later, three decades later, by the National Socialist German Workers' Party, which that's the long form for Nazi. And the reason they don't know it is because nobody ever shows you or anyone out there the pictures. The media will never show you the picture. In fact, I'm the only place on the internet that actually collects and displays historic pictures of kids doing the original Pledge of Allegiance.
All right, let's go back to the beginning. We had a drop off before we heard exactly who was responsible for writing the Pledge of Allegiance. Would you touch upon that first?
Yeah, Francis Bellamy, 1892. He was a famous socialist at that time. And part of it was because of his cousin, Edward Bellamy, that at that time wrote a very famous book called Looking Backward, which portrays a man who sleeps from 1888 to the year 2000, interestingly enough, wakes up in the year 2000, and it's this totalitarian socialist society that has developed, which Edward Bellamy portrayed as a dandy utopia.
Right, a utopia socialist state, correct?
That's correct. It's a book that describes the year 2000 as the government assigning all jobs, everyone being forced to have exactly the same value that they are allowed to have by the government. Ration cards, can you believe it? The guy actually foresaw ration cards, Soviet-style rationing, only he portrayed it as a wonderful thing where the government tells you what they're going to give you. That's how you get your food, clothing, and shelter. And everyone's conscripted into what he actually called an industrial army in the book, using that term favorably. All men are conscripted into the industrial army from, I think, the age 25 until the age 45 or something like that.
Well, let me stop you there, because have you any information that Bellamy might have been influenced also by the utopian novels, or not actually, well, they're fiction, they're not novels, by H.G. Wells, like The Open Conspiracy or The New World Order or anything like that?
It wouldn't surprise me. When you look at the history of the Bellamy cousins, you see, at that time, a lot of socialists were writing a lot of stuff, and it was going all over the place. In fact, Edward Bellamy's book was translated into 20 different languages, was known to have been read by Lenin's wife, and John Dewey and another historian at the time were speaking of it favorably when they said that it was matched and influenced by Das Kapital.
Right, and H.G. Wells would have been somewhat contemporaneous with the Bellamys. They certainly could have read some of his writings. And, of course, in the New World Order he writes, I mean, that doesn't kick you right in the head, that title. He says, you know, you're getting socialism whether you like it or not. So certainly Wells, through literature, the Bellamys also, perhaps somewhat spiritually, and also Dewey, educationally, have been implanted into our system to affect, I would assume, almost every aspect of our culture.
Right. As a matter of fact, the funny thing about the Industrial Army and looking backward is that the school system as portrayed in that book is what Francis Bellamy and Edward Bellamy were promoting in the U.S. and through the Pledge of Allegiance. He was promoting a monolithic government school system in order to create the people who would be in the Industrial Army. It was part of the whole government system. You go through a government socialized school and you become part of the Industrial Army.
I have something here in front of me. Have you ever read anything about the Bellamys by Dr. John W. Baer?
I sure have. He's a very well-known website. Unfortunately, the really weird thing about his website is he never has had, and to this day does not have, any actual photographs of the original Pledge of Allegiance with the straight arm salute. I'm it.
Yeah, and we want to mention that website. Please do that, Rex.
Yeah, it's rexcurry.net. That's rexcurry.net all together.
And what can they find on that website?
Oh, well, I have my collection of photos. And by the way, I continue to collect them. So if anybody out there has them or knows where some are, let me know. Log on, send me an email or call in. And I have extensive articles about Francis Bellamy and the pledge and how it ties into what we're talking about.
Well, ironically, in this particular article entitled The Pledge of Allegiance, A Short History, Baer has Bellamy as a Baptist minister. I think that is correct, that he was a Protestant minister, was he not?
That's correct. In fact, he was, oddly enough, in a group at that time known as the Society of Christian Socialists. Of course, he also was in a group that was known as the Nationalist Group, the Nationalist Clubs, and they had a nationalist magazine, and they advocated the nationalization of most of the American economy. That was their philosophy.
In fact, when he wrote the pledge, he did not include the words "under God," did he?
That's correct. And I'll tell you something else that's funny about him. Being a minister, you mentioned, a preacher, and being thrown out of the church that he preached at because of his oddball, socialistic, totalitarian sermons, he nevertheless, for some strange reason, it's not even clear to me, disliked, apparently, church schools and private schools and all the better alternatives to government schools because so much of his life was dedicated to promoting a monolithic government school system. And his philosophy was that education was supposed to be done by the government. The government should run all the schools. That's where everyone should be educated in order to make, you know, the great socialist man the cog in the wheel of the Industrial Army.
Well, just what you said there about the education system, that's what the manifesto had in mind when they talked about a free education for all. And it was not to necessarily put them into post-high school academia, but to turn them out into the workforce. So when we see free education, we think, well, that's pretty good. But this is the kind of education they're talking about, just what you reiterated about what Bellamy wanted. Mm-hmm. And isn't it rich that he was a chairman of the Committee of State Superintendents in the National Education Association?
Yeah. Isn't that something?
I mean, he got his hands in about as much as he could.
It's just terrifying. And you never hear about any of this stuff. I don't. I try to look for it when I read the paper. And, you know, we've got the court case now at the U.S. Supreme Court, and they never mention hardly any of this, certainly never show you the pictures. And it's scary to think about the influence that he and his cousin, the author of the book, had on these socialist hellholes like the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the National Socialist German Workers' Party, People's Republic of China. These people predated it. His book was translated into 20 foreign languages. It's fascinating to think about what impact these people had on creating these monstrosities where hundreds of millions of people died and were slaughtered by the socialist societies that came about in the 1900s.
Well, you make a good point there, and I think it bears repeating, and that is we forget that these killer regimes were socialist in nature. And, you know, as I see in academia, especially in colleges, there is a tendency to lean toward this utopian socialism where everything will be equal, everybody will be okay, everybody according to their own needs. But that isn't the way it works out because it's run by people who still tend to get corrupted. Don't you agree?
Sure, sure. And they end up equal because the first thing that happens is they end up equally poor and then they end up equally dead by the hundreds of millions. It's funny to wonder whether the National Socialist German Workers' Party was in fact influenced even to the extent of its straight-arm salute by what was the widespread practice in the United States, pledging allegiance on cue from the government in the government schools every morning with that type of a salute.
Yeah, people, to really, really visualize what Rex is talking about, you should go to his website and look at the photos he has there of the way the flag was saluted during the pledge prior to World War II. Did it exist anywhere after World War II, or did they pretty much drop it once they saw Hitler's variation of the vertical salute?
They started to drop it. That's a fascinating story itself. It went some places even beyond World War II because, I think at that time, schools didn't necessarily, all do everything at the same time, certainly not what the United States government told them to do. They were more independent. So I've actually corresponded with people over the Internet who did it even into the 1960s. But I think most people were dropping it by the end of World War II, shortly before the end of World War II. But it's amazing how long it lasted. For example, one of the things I've discovered in doing this research is, you remember Jesse Owens, you went over there, showed what a great athlete he was in Munich, in Germany, when the Olympics were hosted by the National Socialist German Workers' Party.
In 36, I think that was.
Right. At that time, that was contemporaneous with the time when his friends and family were still being forced to go to segregated government schools in the United States of America, racist, segregated government schools, and were performing the straight-arm salute with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. It's absolutely mind-boggling to think about it. I don't think most people realize what was going on at that time.
Yeah, I had listened to a program by a pirate radio person out of Springfield, Illinois, by the name of Kentako Mantabi. And what he was saying, and it really got me thinking, and now when I find out what Bellamy had in mind, I have to say that I believe it's true, that what you saw was really a Romanist salute, wasn't it?
Yes, that's what some people think. I am not clear. I've seen some people claim that the Roman salute was a fist that was extended out. Other people say it was a straight arm salute out. Usually when you talk to people about the National Socialist German Workers' Party salute, a lot of them like to tell you that it was adopted because of his influence from Mussolini, and who, by the way, started out as a phenomenally successful socialist, and he ended up adopting the term fascist because he had his falling out with the socialists, and he said that it was a hybrid form of socialism. Nevertheless, they'll say, well, that's where the National Socialist German Workers' Party picked it up. But I've never seen yet any more of an explanation than that. It seems to be a common thing to say, but I have not seen any support for it. I'll also tell you that obviously Mussolini came after 1892, easily three decades after Francis Bellamy came up with the salute here. So you can still make the point that Mussolini may have gotten the idea from seeing what the United States was doing and saying, gee, you know, that if it was the Roman salute, he might have said, hey, that's a Roman salute. Well, let's do the same thing. And then the National Socialist German Workers' Party said, hey, look what they're doing over there. It's part of the National Socialist Movement in the United States of America. The Industrial Army, the book by Edward Bellamy, what a great idea. Let's jump on the bandwagon of socialism. So it's frightening to think how close the United States of America came to the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the National Socialist German Workers' Party, and the People's Republic of China.
Well, it's also interesting that if socialism leading to a new world order was in the blueprints for a long time, then it's probably was in everybody's playbook. But in the United States, it would take much longer to implement because you had to tear down a constitutional republic. We're with Rex Curry of RexCurry.net, Tampa lawyer who's a staunch anti-socialist. We're talking about whether or not the pledge is one of patriotism or blind obedience to the state. We'll be back after these messages. To the Grassy Knoll on AM 1350 WBCF, AM 1400 WZHR, Gate City, Zephyr Hills, and New Tampa, and a little Bruce juice because I'm heading up to Jersey tomorrow. Going back to the old hood, I miss traffic jams and getting a finger and brown brick buildings and rusty rail yards. We're with Rex Curry from RexCurry.net, and we're talking about the Pledge of Allegiance and what exactly might be wrong with it. And Rex, when we start up the second segment, but before we do that, you have items on your site that are for sale that are pretty hip stuff. You want to talk about that a little?
Yeah, I try to tie it in. You know, we're talking about the time period when Roosevelt, World War II, FDR, he promoted the massive socialism that we're living under now, including Social Security. I have my socialist slave T-shirts, which say my socialist slave number is 26200-6302, and I've got being a lawyer and doing criminal defense, I have things that advocate saying no to searches, and I'm pro-gun. One says buy a gun with your tax refund. Another one says I dare you to search my lunchbox. I've got the socialist slave baseball caps. You know, you name it. More government means you need more guns. That's another one. And here's one. The more I learn about government, the more I like my guns. You know, which all ties into what we're talking about. Because when you think about the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, National Socialist German Workers' Party, People's Republic of China, you're talking about 62 million killed by one, 35 million killed by another, 21 million slaughtered by the third. I mean, you know, the more you learn about it, the more you like your guns.
I want to give you this little aside also. We got a phone call from a listener up in Canada who's listening on the stream. And he said that in today's Calgary Sun, ironically, in a little section they have every day called Did You Know, They did a piece on the original American salute to the Pledge of Allegiance as being the straight arm pledge.
Cool. You know, I'll tell your listeners something else. Not only will they probably never hear about from the mainstream media, even from people who, like us who talk about that salute, I can tell you something else. There's even more to the salute. The salute actually started out with a military salute. It was supposed to be, I pledge allegiance with a military salute, the hand up to the eyebrow, right? And then it was supposed to be to the flag, and at which point they would extend their arms outward towards the flag. Mm-hmm. That's how you got to the straight arm salute. I actually have pictures of that also on rexcurry.net, the military part of it. And the scary part is, again, you see how this ties into Francis Bellamy and Edward Bellamy's concept of an industrial army. The actual term that they used, industrial army, they were having kids in government schools doing military mm-hmm. salutes and then the straight arm salute as part of their industrial army that they were producing through government schools.
I'm just curious, have you looked much at the 10 planks of the manifesto and how many of them have been implemented here?
I'm familiar with what you're talking about. I haven't looked at it recently. Isn't it amazing, though, how much of it has been implemented? The income taxes and the violation of property rights. And, of course, we've got our socialist slave numbers. That's what I call Social Security numbers. And now, of course, with the Homeland Security and
the Fatherland.
Yeah, the massive growth of government. Wow, we're starting to get to the point where we're having to whip out our papers at the drop of a hat.
We had spoken a couple of weeks ago, and I had told you about a book written by someone who would later become head of the American Communist Party, William Z. Foster, mm-hmm. in Towards Soviet America. And, folks, if you think that any of this is hogwash, you have to go and you have to read that book. In 1932, at the beginning of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's reign, he comes out with a book saying, this is what's going to happen as we Sovietize the United States. And forget about the Soviet Union collapsing. Forget about that altogether. All right, they downsized a little. They got rid of Muslim states that weren't Slavic and which they were having trouble with. No, they didn't collapse at all. And so Foster writes about the things that would have to happen in expanding government. And one of the things he makes a very pointed remark about, and that is there would be a federal Department of Education, which we now know is the U.S. Department of Education. So, you know, if you think this isn't where it's going, then you have to look at that book where he lays the blueprint out and it happened. And as Rex said, the graduated income tax is not in the Constitution. It's a plank of the manifesto. And they had to force down, what was that, the 16th Amendment, right, Rex?
Yes, sir.
In order to make that fraud go through. And it was never ratified by the proper number of states. But that treacherous piece of dung, Philander Knox, the Secretary of State under Taft, just said, oh, it would happen. He proclaimed it.
Yes, and I'll tell you, schools are nowhere mentioned in the U.S. Constitution either. So,
Franklin thought it would be a good idea, and we can understand why educating people to a certain extent was, I would say, benign. But I don't think where it's going now, with complete, national control, which will soon be international, that's lending itself to a very free education system.
Sure. And I would say schools were growing and improving just back then, before the government got involved. The government wants to create this myth that we'd all be boneheads dying of poverty if not for government schools. And that's no more correct than it would be if you were to say the same thing about government taking over grocery stores, food, clothing, shelter, and everything else. In fact, what you get from that is you get poverty, just like a la the Soviet Union and all the other socialist hellholes. Schools were good then. They were improving. They would continue to improve. And to even today, the real advances you see in education come from capitalism. They come from computers, the use of technology, all those advances. And the government's part in it just continues to decay.
Would you mind if I read the original Pledge of Allegiance that he had?
Not at all. Go right ahead.
It says, I pledge allegiance to my flag and the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And, of course, he did not like the fact that they changed it to the flag. Is that correct?
That's correct. And then they added of the United States of America.
Okay.
And, it's funny, the Marx you hear about him because, in many ways, he was a bigot, and I actually have an article about many of the bigoted remarks he made at the time, and it's ironic that, by supporting government schools, he put in place the system whereby we had government-mandated racism and segregation for at least six decades or more through the government school system. They impose that. You can very well argue that we would have been over that long time before, but for the fact the government got involved, institutionalized it, mandated it by law through a monolithic government school system. Yeah. Segregation and racism.
When you say he was bigoted, I have to also say that not unlike the members in England of the Milner's Kindergarten Group, which was an extension of Cecil Rhodes.
Not unlike the National Socialist German
right.
Workers' Party that ended up adopting a similar salute. In fact, it's, all the parallels we keep hitting on, it just becomes more and more amazing. Because here we were, again, we're talking about finally being at war with National Socialist German Workers' Party, and we've got segregated, racist government schools, a monolithic school system that's doing essentially the same thing.
Well, talking about the bigotry that we did see with the Nazi regime, and also, as I was saying, with this band of intellectuals and utopians up in Great Britain, they also felt, you've heard of that, you remember that old axiom, the white man's burden?
Yes.
All right, that's where it came from. They felt that this world would have to be ruled by a select group of basically old white men, and that's what they were working towards. So that bigotry is also very much on the underside of the socialist mentality, and that also comes from elitism, don't you think? Like, we know where it's at, and everybody else is small people.
No doubt about it. That's what socialism is in a nutshell. And another interesting parallel is the Gobitas kids, Gobitas. They misspell it. Yes, Supreme Court actually got it as Gobitas. Their name was Gobitas. And they were the kids who in 1940 had the original U.S. Supreme Court decision that actually said you do have to say the Pledge of Allegiance or the government will expel you from the school. And the amazing thing is, when you think about it at the time, there were Jehovah's Witnesses. These were Jehovah's Witnesses, very religious people. Some of them lived in Germany under the National Socialist German Workers' Party. They were being persecuted for not pledging allegiance to the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Same treatment over there. Here, they're doing a similar salute. They're watching what's going on with Hitler and the Nazis, right? They say, we don't want to pledge allegiance because we think it's like religion. It's like you're making us worship the government. And we have our religion, which is, you know, a Christian religion. The court originally said, that's too bad. We're going to make you do it and expel you if you don't.
Yeah, good point. I want to pick up on that when we come back from the commercial break. We're speaking with Rex Curry, a Tampa attorney, big anti-socialist, great website, Rex Curry, RexCurry.net. And he'll be back with us after these messages.
Myself alone again. Don't run back inside, don't It's the program your mother warned you about, The Grassy Knoll, on WDCF AM 1350.
Hello, we're back at The Grassy Knoll on this April 23rd, 2004. We have Rex Curry with us, a Tampa lawyer, who has a website out there, rexcurry.net, and devoted to exposing the lies of of socialism. He is an anti-socialist. And we're talking about the pledge and just what might be so bad about that, considering its roots and who wrote it. But, Rex, we left off about you saying the religious element.
Right. The Gobitas kids were the famous kids who stopped pledging allegiance and took it all the way to the United States Supreme Court. It took them years to get there, too. I think they probably started in 1933 or something. The decision came down in 1940. They originally lost. The U.S. Supreme Court said, yes, you are going to do the straight arm salute that the National Socialist wrote, and if you don't, we're going to expel you. So, again, it's amazing because at the same time, that's what was happening in the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Fascinating, ominous parallel. And, in fact, the reason that the Gobitas kids stopped doing the salute was the same reason they didn't want to worship the National Socialist German Workers' Party in Germany, where they were being persecuted. And so their first response from the U.S. Supreme Court was essentially the same, although we hadn't gotten to the point where the U.S. government was actually killing Jehovah's Witnesses or killing other religious people, but they were saying, yeah, we can make you do this, and if you don't, we will expel you.
Now, this religious component, this is kind of interesting. What do you think was accomplished? What do you think the plan was to accomplish when the Knights of Columbus in 1954 added the words "under God" to the pledge? What's your take on that?
It's just amazing to watch how history changes, because the explanation from the Knights of Columbus was, at that time, essentially to fight godless communism. And they figured if they stuck "under God" in the pledge, that would mean that socialists and communists wouldn't want to say the pledge, which is completely ironic when you consider that the author, Francis Bellamy, was in the Society of Christian Socialists. He was a socialist who was a Christian in his mind, and he wrote that pledge, and he did it, of course, without the words "under God" in it originally. Now, I don't think he did that deliberately. I think that it didn't occur to him at the time to stick that in, the "under God" phrase. However, the other thing I'd like to point out is when the Gobitas kids were refusing to do the Pledge of Allegiance, "under God" was not in the pledge. So that wasn't even the issue to them. The issue to them was worshiping government, worshiping the flag, you know, a graven image. They were essentially saying that socialism was forcing them to worship the state. And so it was after the Gobitas kids case, as you said, the Knights of Columbus pushed putting "under God" into the pledge.
You know, I'm thinking something else happened there, and I'm not, this is not a yeah, but.
Go right ahead.
I'm thinking this could, well, it depends on which side of the fence you want to look at this from. To me, when they went ahead and added "under God," in a sense, they took that which was secular and they made it kind of ecclesiastical. And as Baer wrote, the pledge was now both a patriotic oath, though I doubt it's patriotism, and a public prayer. So that was kind of a cute little meld, don't you think, if that is true? And I can't say that I know that it is.
Well, you know, that's an interesting take. Unfortunately, if that was how it was considered by the U.S. Supreme Court, then they would have to rule in favor of Newdow. Because, I mean, unfortunately, the argument that's being made by people who support the pledge as it's written is that, oh, that doesn't really mean anything. It's just a quaint custom thing. It's like saying God bless you when you sneeze or something. So if the Supreme Court was to believe that that was, in fact, a prayer, that the pledge had been turned into a prayer, then they would end up, of course, agreeing with Newdow. Of course, what I'd like to do is not only chunk the entire pledge, since I find the whole thing terrifying, and the whole act of this robotic recitation in collective on cue by the government every day, I find that terrifying. And not only that, I'd like to get rid of government schools. And then if we go back to what we used to have, which was private schools, homeschooling, and church schooling, which, in fact, we still have. Lots of people do it, and those are where your best students are.
Without a doubt. But I can also tell you it's going to get worse. Well, Harry Spencer's with us now, and his wife is an educator. She's a teacher in a secondary school. She recently had to attend a somewhat of a seminar in Florida. And what was the horrifying element they were trying to break to the teachers?
They were kind of greasing them up for the fact that they'll be privatizing the school system and how much better that will be over the government running the school system.
So now you'll have
having businesses run it instead.
And, of course, that, you know, corporation run is corporate fascism, which is what also Mussolini believed in, did he not?
Right, yeah. And, of course, Mussolini was a socialist, a very famous, well-written, admired socialist when he started using the term fascist to describe his hybrid. Of course, I don't want the government involved with vouchers. I don't want the government subsidizing businesses. I don't want the government involved in education at all. I want it the way it used to be, which is essentially, I analogize it to church and state. I have this pet phrase, separation of church and state is as important as the separation of school and state is as important as the separation of church and state, which means that I don't want the government running the churches. I don't want them running the schools. I like it to be the way it used to be, which is government stays out of the churches, they stay out of the schools, and we have a free society, which is a better educated society.
Well, unfortunately, the opposite trend has been growing, and that is they are definitely involved with churches, with those churches looking for tax-exempt status of 501c3 church, which most of them are. So they don't know it, but the hooks are into them, and when the government doesn't like what they're preaching, they can definitely ask them to stop it, or there'll be retribution.
Absolutely.
And in education, we have had on the show, I don't know if you are aware of her, but Charlotte Isherbit has written a book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. She was, get this, a U.S. DOE change agent, and when she saw what was going on, she grabbed as many documents as she could. She bolted and tried to expose what is happening with education. And, Rex, it's going to go not only from state-run to federal-run to internationally-run. UNESCO is going to get its hands on it, and we're all going to be one happy education family.
It's absolutely terrifying.
It is, without a doubt. And, you know, the thing I want to bring up, too, as far as this bit about putting under God in there, you know, the thing I have to ask of Christians is whether or not, as Scripture says, they should be taking an oath or a vow to anything other than their God. And there is Scripture to back that up. And they may not think that this is applicable, but I really do think you have to wonder, knowing where this came from. And would you do me a favor for those who might just be tuning in the second half of the hour, Rex, in a thumbnail, who wrote the Pledge of Allegiance and what was his background?
Francis Bellamy, a self-proclaimed socialist in the nationalist movement in the United States in 1892, wrote the Pledge of Allegiance to promote government schools, the government taking over education, ending private schools, church schools, all of the better alternatives, because he believed that the government should operate all the schools and control education.
Along with the pledge, though, I'm thumbing through here. Just give me a second. I'm taking a look at Bayer's article, by the way. In fact, I wanted to pull up your website, but we had a little hard drive situation here, and we can't get you up.
Well, I can tell you one thing that's interesting.
Go ahead.
A lot of people don't know. Francis Bellamy actually died in Tampa, Florida.
Yep.
He resided in Tampa, Florida for the last years of his life, and he died. I've seen his house. It's in South Tampa. But he died in 1931, so he actually lived through a lot of the atrocities in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, and he was just at that point where the National Socialist German Workers Party was starting to become powerful, just when he died. So I don't know what he thought at that time. I haven't seen anything that indicates what his thoughts were, whether he was aware of the atrocities or whether he had any inkling of what was to come. But it's interesting to wonder whether he was happy to hear that there was a group calling themselves National Socialists who had a similar salute.
Yeah.
And it's just terrifying to even think about it.
Well, I see here, he died in 1931. Is that your understanding?
That's right.
So I don't think he may have seen the full-blown effect.
No, he didn't see it. Not the National Socialist. Now, he did live through a lot of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics,
right.
And it is possible he was hearing things about what was going on with the Union of Soviet Socialists, the mass starvations, the killings, the purges. That was becoming known. So he knew that part of it, you know, this big socialist monstrosity over there, which was being portrayed by many people as a utopia.
Exactly. But, you know, it's interesting, and I had told you I was going to send you this book, and I will do it. I had mentioned about Bella Dodd's School of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she was an avowed communist. She believed in the platitudes that were there, and then she realized through the years not only who was funding it, Western financiers, believe it or not, but that also it really didn't stay true to their beliefs. And she had made a mention that once a comrade falls, they don't have time to pick you up. So with this whole idea of what was going on in Russia, I think a lot of them denied it or said this is the price that they have to pay. Because in the 30s, as she chronicles, they did not waver. I mean, they were right there going full bore, and they were getting dictates right out of Moscow.
And I'll tell you something else a lot of people forget. World War II, they usually say, started when the National Socialist German Workers' Party invaded Poland in 1939. A lot of people forget this, and you'll see them leave this out constantly in the media. They were allied with the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The Union of Soviet Socialist Republics also invaded Poland with the National Socialist German Workers' Party in 1939. And interestingly enough, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics at that time killed more Polish people than the Germans did.
Yeah. Well, I think that's not known for a very deliberate reason.
Yes.
We're with Rex Curry. His website, rexcurry.net. And there you can see many writings and documentation about the socialist effort, including the Pledge of Allegiance, about which we are speaking today. We'll be back with Rex after these messages.
Springsteen Day? That was.
You're from Michigan. All you know is Seeger.
Well, I know other people.
You're on my bumper again?
Yeah, you know.
I'm going to Jersey.
Well, when are you going to Jersey anyway?
Soon right after this broadcast.
Are you really?
And Rex, we're going to find if I'm on the no-fly list real quick.
Right.
I wouldn't worry about it.
You wouldn't, but I should.
Well, yeah, but.
All right.
Hey, welcome to the police state.
Thank you. Yes. Let's get back to something that we didn't touch upon. Well, we didn't get back to it at all. We didn't start it. And that is, how in the world did you ever get on the trail of this?
Well, I'm a libertarian, if you guys want to categorize me. I know you've said I'm very anti-socialist. Absolutely true. And that's why I'm a libertarian. And if anybody wants to find out more, just give me contact me through the website. And we do have meetings and all. How did I get involved in this? Well, you know, it had a lot to do with the Newdow case. So I kept reading the paper and kept thinking, when are they going to tell people what the salute was like? You know, when are they ever going to show a picture, you know, or anything like that? And they never do. And so I remembered it. I'd seen one years ago, and I was just flabbergasted when I learned what it meant and what it was. So I started looking for one because nobody had one, and I started advertising for them. I still do. So that's how I became the only place on the Internet with a collection that I display of historical original salutes and the Pledge of Allegiance.
Well, I have to tell you that you have a compadre here in the studio.
All right.
Yeah, I'm also a member of the Libertarian Party.
Splendid.
There aren't very many of us.
And that's another thing that's funny about it, because you see the media, all they want to do is talk about the socialists, the Democrats, and the Republicans, and they act like the only thing anybody has to say that's of any importance is, you know, the Democrats, the Democrat socialists, and the Republican socialists, you know, and it's just absurd. I'm starting to think that the people in the media must be daft, but, you know, they're probably,
right.
they're also ignorant, because let's face it, try this sometime, and I talk about this on my website, rexcurry.net. Go to a place like the New York Times and type in National Socialist German Workers' Party into their own website search engine of their archives, right? What do you get? Last time I did it, I got a big zero. They have never used the full phrase.
Right. And you're saying they deliberately sanitize that connection to the Nazis so that the word socialist isn't connected with the Nazis.
Right, exactly. Now, if you type in Nazi, Nazism, Nazis, you get thousands of hits because they'll be happy to go on and on about them, but they'll never tell you that they were the National Socialist German Workers' Party. You can do that with your local papers,
Workers unite.
Right. Do that with the local papers. You'll get either the same result or next to no results for the full phrase, but you'll get hundreds, thousands of hits for the abbreviation. The hackneyed, lazy abbreviation that the media likes to use. And, you know, they've been doing it so long, they don't know what the abbreviation abbreviates anymore themselves. And, of course, if you ask people you just know, people you meet, you'll discover rampant ignorance about where the word Nazi comes from.
Do you think, I'm going to ask you to answer this question. How would you connect socialism and communism? Can you say what the difference is, or is one a predecessor of the other?
Well, to me, there is no difference. It's just pointless to try to debate and nitpick differences between people who call themselves communists and socialists. The way they govern, the people they actually support for government, they're all the same. They constantly support more spending, more taxes, more laws, more government, to the point where now we have Republicans holding office, federal government, and they are outspending Clinton by more than double. And that's in social spending alone. So it just becomes an absurd point to me to try to make distinctions between fascists, communists, and socialists. We all know how they were inspired. We all know the kind of books they read. You know, we all know what the general idea is. It's all the same, so I just call them socialists, you know. And that's why I don't like seeing the word fascist used and the word Nazi used, because to me that's the way they cover up the socialistic inspirations behind those ideologies. I like to use the word, the full phrase, National Socialist German Workers' Party. That's another thing you'll see in the media. You'll see them constantly harp on how horrible the National Socialist German Workers' Party is. They call them the Nazis. They killed thousands of people. 21 million people is one of the high estimates. And yet you will never see these same people in the same articles or in any articles tell you that the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics killed 62 million people. The People's Republic of China killed 35 million people. And the National Socialist German Workers' Party comes in third place as the socialist trio of atrocities, the worst mass murderers of all time, with 21 million. You know, so it's an amazing thing that you just, all you hear about is the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
And I call them the socialist trio of atrocities. I put them all together, They're all the same to me. They're big government people. They're people who love government, love laws, taxing, spending, same thing.
Yeah, that is the big trio of the greatest mass murderers the world has ever seen. The thing about socialism to me is that I think that's what they try to sell people on, because it has certain supposedly nice points, let's just say, with this equality, although, as you had kind of mentioned before, yeah, it's equality. They treat you all like dogs.
Right.
But still, there seems to be the appeal to a lot of people about, like, why don't we all just get paid the same for whatever we do, blah, blah, blah. And that was another one of George Bernard Shaw, by the way, the glib playwright. You should see what he writes with regard to people and the socialistic process. You won't believe it. Well, let me just say real quickly, I mean, in one of his lines, believe it or not, this is in the book now, let me think, an intelligent guide, was it? An intelligent guide, the Women's Intelligent Guide to Socialism, something like that. If you Google that, you'll come up with it. Shaw says in this, Rex, he says, if you'll be fed, you'll be clothed, blah, 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 and if you don't like it or don't have the timber, so to speak, to exist in this kind of society, we will kill you in a kindly manner. I could not believe that, to the point I got the book.
That's why they want to disarm you.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yes, once the guns disappear, as it did in those three other nations that you spoke about, that's when the blood starts running down the avenues.
That's right.
But as I said, I think that socialism is sold to you. They hold it out as a shiny apple, and then what they do is, when you get hooked, then they bring in communism, which is as draconian as it gets.
Yeah, that's why they'll also never, as I mentioned earlier, they'll never tell you that World War II started with the National Socialist German Workers' Party's allies with the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics invading Poland together. They always leave that out now. It's only the Nazis.
Yeah.
So,
how far down the road do you think we are in America? I mean, if you can put it on a scale as to being overtaken in a socialist situation, though we think that we're free, how bad would you rank it?
Yeah, that is really hard to judge and say how you quantify these things. I do know that the spending just keeps going and going, and we keep voting for, I don't vote for them, but people for some bizarre reason keep voting for the same people. They've done it their entire lives, and the government does nothing but grow and grow. It's distressing, and of course now with the socialist slave numbers becoming a national ID card, everybody asking for your papers, it's becoming a police state. It's terrifying to think about. By the way, on my website, you'll see that, as far as I know, I'm the first person who ever publicly organized the burning of socialist slave cards, Social Security cards. I have a picture of it.
You did that?
Yeah. I'm one of them. One of those cards in the flame. That's me burning my Social Security card.
Well, I got to ask you this. Have you withdrawn from the Social Security system?
Well, no, I haven't done that yet. I keep hoping I can do that someday soon, but unfortunately, you know, my situation at this time, I think the best thing I can do is talk as much as I can, expose people to the pictures of the pledge and the history of the socialist slave system, and I think I'm more effective that way at this point.
Well, that music tells us that we are to the end of our show. Rex, we want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks a lot. It's been a blast. I love it.
That's great. And I'll tell you what, you know, you're local, and we'll stay in touch. And do me one favor, if you would.
Yes, sir.
Keep your eye on what's going on with the Patriot Act in Tampa, okay?
I'll do it.
There's something shaking with the council. They kicked it out, and now they want to bring it back. So we'll stay in touch, and if you can put your finger on the pulse of what's going on down there, I appreciate it.
I will. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Rex Curry, rexcurry.net. Go check it out. A lot of goodies out there, too. Some really smart butt shirts and hats and bags and stuff. Go take a look over there and find out for yourself. And we're going to break the CNN news, and we'll be back directly thereafter. This is the Grassy Knoll on AM 1350 WDC.